Hola, soy Julio Torres y están escuchando The Takeaway con Tansina Vega.
That's comedian Julio Torres, and he's been a writer at Saturday Night Live since 2016. And even though he mainly operates behind the scenes, he's managed to stand out with sketches that highlight his uniquely absurd point of view.
Introducing Wells for Sensitive Little Boys from Fisher-Price. Wells for sensitive boys to wish upon, confide in, and reflect by. Some boys live unexamined lives, but this one's heart is full of questions.
I forgot about it for years, but then I remembered that Avatar, the giant international blockbuster, used the papyrus font as its logo.
This summer, Julio has been spending more time in front of the camera. In June, his Spanish-language horror comedy Los Espookies premiered on HBO. And this Saturday, he's out with a stand-up special called My Favorite Shapes. The hour-long set finds Julio performing on a futuristic-looking stage, standing behind a conveyor belt that carries along a range of shapes and objects, from a simple square to a potted cactus.
I have begun to fear that this new cactus knows that seconds before it arrived into my apartment, I, with my bare hands, excavated the corpse of his predecessor, threw it out, wiped the vessel clean, and said, "Oh, look, a new home for you." And by the way, I can speak freely in front of this cactus because he doesn't speak any English.
The concept might seem offbeat, but Julio says the idea of performing shape-based comedy made perfect sense to him.
I've always been very compelled by the humor in objects and feel like I work best when operating through metaphor.
When we spoke this week, I asked Julio how he uses his very specific sensibilities to set himself apart in the crowded comedy scene of 2019.
I leave up to the listener whether or not I stand out from that field. But I don't know. I do things in the only way that I know how to. I like being on the side of the odd rather than standing and mocking the odd, if that makes sense. When I hear a story about someone behaving strangely, rarely do I find it funny to make fun of that person, and usually on behalf of that, on the side of that person. So that's sort of how I operate.
You're almost talking about empathy there.
Yeah, sure, yes. And empathy, it's a good exercise. Even with people that we hate, it's a good exercise, I think, to try and map out how they got there.
Anybody in particular?
Well, I always end up like trying to untangle the tangled cords that is the mind of Donald Trump. And just sort of trying to, like, how did this man get here? Like, what was that childhood like?
Have you gotten us any answers?
No, what do I know? But I've read that he would throw rocks at kids when he was a kid, which makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, it's sort of like a bully psyche, right? It's deeply insecure. So we are all victims of his insecurity.
We're going to dig into that a little bit in turn. There's so many layers to that.
Right.
But the first layer I want to take here is Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has hosted Saturday Night Live. He did it before you started working there.
He did, yeah.
You've written a couple of sketches that give some insight into Melania Trump and President Trump. So how do you take what we just talked about and apply that to writing a sketch about Donald Trump?
I have indirectly dealt with the political climate a lot. But head on, there's a couple that I spearheaded. The first one was sort of extracted from my stand-up, a series of videos, a very short videos called Melania Moments. These videos imagined Melania as sort of it was very much like a princess trapped in a castle. That point of view has since expired, or like very quickly expired, as we started learning more and more about her. We still don't know a bunch, but it's safe to say that she's not trapped. And then another one that I was involved in, it was called Through Donald's Eyes or Through Trump's Eyes. And it was a point of view sketch where you could just sort of be inside his head and see him waking up and see him like go throughout his day in this sort of like horrifying little journey and feel his what scares him and like what ticks him off. That I also thought was a fun exercise.
You've been writing for SNL for almost 3 years now. I've watched the show for so many years, it's embarrassing. And so I'm a fan, but it's also been a show that's been roundly criticized for its lack of diversity in terms of its cast and even in terms of the writer's room. So you're one of a handful of writers of color, I imagine, in the writer's room. How do you balance that with the political climate today, with things like President Trump, with the controversy around our immigration policies and what's happening at the border? Like, do you feel compelled to have to write about those things, or are you just writing off of whatever is interesting that week?
Sometimes not that anyone, you know, hired me for any specific reason, or that it's, never has it been expected for me to write a certain things just because I am a certain kind of person.
So in other words, you're not, because one thing I hate is being like the cultural representative. Like, you're the Latino, so you have to write the Latino stories,
No. Never once have I been expected to write the Latino story or the queer story or anything like that. And I mean, first of all, there are more queer people of color behind the scenes than I think you'd imagine. They're all deeply talented. And I think that we all write the things that we are attracted to that makes us laugh. And I've been lucky to earnestly be able to explore what I artistically want to explore every week. But sometimes I do personally think like, oh, dear God, I should be the one that addresses X, Y, and Z, right? But I guess I'm just not skilled in that way. I'm not like a sort of homework writer kind of way. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I think a big part of being a comedian or a performer or a writer or an artist in this climate is reconciling or just really facing the question, do I have a responsibility to directly address this? And I believe the answer is yes. I have yet to answer to what extent or in what form.
That's fair.
Yeah. 'Cause you can't force it, right? You can't like, which is why remaining vocal and politically active beyond, you know, the jokes that you tell on stage is important.
In terms of that, shifting gears for a minute, you're also bilingual, which is fantastic.
Right.
Born and you grew up in El Salvador and lived there till about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that transition. When do you decide? Because a lot of U.S.-born Latinos in the United States, we use this Spanglish thing where we kind of go in and out of English and Spanish. And do you approach your comedy differently if it's for in Spanish versus in English? You did Los Spookies almost entirely in Spanish, but you know, there are a couple moments in your stand-up where you inflect that language as well. So how do you decide when to do that?
Most of my career has been in English. I came to the States wanting to be a writer, wanting to write for television and film. So for most of the work that I've done, I did it in English without thinking twice about it, which artistically gave me this sort of layer of removal from the performance, because I am creating in a second language. And it gives me this sort of like feeling of like watching everything from the outside that I have sort of come to really like. And then with Los Spookies, I was very excited to do it for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons was getting to do comedy in my native language. And then just sort of like ping-ponging, be like, okay, so I'm from here, but I've been thinking and operating over here. What happens when I take what I learned in B and I bring it back to A? So it was this triangulation of culture and artistic experience that was very interesting.
Because not everything is translatable.
Not everything is translatable, no. And that is something that that Anna and I, who wrote Los Spookies, were thinking about a lot when we were writing. I think that we're both prone to like wordplay. And then we'd be typing and be like, abort. Because if this show is going to truly be bilingual, you can't have jokes that are just for some people. Anna is of Panamanian descent. I am a Salvadorian native. Fred's cultural background is informed by Venezuela. Our director is Mexican. Two of our leads are Mexican. And we shot in Chile with a lot of Chilean actors. So then it became this sort of like Spanish Tower of Babel. Which motivated us to set the world of the story in an imagined country rather than having Chileans put on their best Mexican accent, which is an idea that we entertained for a little bit. We decided that it was going to be in this imagined nation, which was an artistic decision that I think we're very happy with. But yeah, like even within Spanish, like sometimes I'll hear people say that I sound foreign. Me, a Salvadorian who lived there up until 10 years ago, you find people like sort of like policing each other's accents and being like, well, that's not how you say that. And it's like, well, that's not how you say that in the country that you're from, but that is how you say that in the next country over. There is no true neutral Spanish, obviously.
Shifting gears for a minute, you tweeted this week about getting your green card.
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah.
In this climate, in this environment, you were able to pull that off. How did that feel?
A little bittersweet. I think that anyone who is not from here but lives here, regardless of how you came here or how easy or hard it was for you, you think about immigration a lot. You think about it every time you're in customs to come to the airport. You think about it when you're filing your taxes. It's sort of this like Kafkaesque cloud hovering over you at all times. So then getting the green card was a sigh of relief, thinking, okay, things are going to get a little easier now. But at the same time, receiving it at a time of great turmoil just really makes you think of how easy you had it in comparison, even though I don't think I had it easy, but just in comparison to the people who are really hurting right now. So yeah, the green card came with a bit of a, like an imposter syndrome attached to it, I feel like, which I'm still like reckoning with.
You've been here 10 years. The political climate has shifted quite a bit.
Yeah.
Particularly when it comes to immigration. Have you felt that shift around in your own life, that people are treating you the same, treating you differently?
I came to the States just as Barack Obama was being inaugurated. And I've been here for the whole Obama administration and now the big shift. But ever since I landed in New York City and have lived here and like grown here as a person and as a comedian, I felt nothing but welcomed and encouraged and supported. So really the political climate to me is sort of a news cycle thing. I am lucky enough to be in this, I'm not going to call it a bubble because why are we the bubble? Why aren't they the bubble? But in this corner over here, it's always felt difficult but welcoming. So really, I've seen it shift, obviously, like we all have in the news. But as for how I go about navigating life, it's felt the same. And I think it's also worth mentioning that coming to the States was never easy. It was nerve-wracking when Obama was president. And I think that that's something that we also have to come to terms a little bit and just don't go too far into this fantasy that there were no deportations when Obama was president.
He was called the deporter-in-chief.
He was called the deporter-in-chief. Of course, the shift now is that it went from what I perceive as a cult thing that the government had to do to a deliberately cruel thing that in many cases it doesn't actually have to do, which is what's happening right now.
Julio Torres' stand-up special, My Favorite Shapes, premieres this Saturday on HBO. Julio, thank you.
Thank you.